It flies extremely well. It's a fun airplane to fly, very responsive. It's fully aerobatic. Some people called it the Widowmaker, and I finally found out or realized that the people who called it a Widowmaker had never flown it before. I never heard anyone who flew it call it that. I have done single engine rolls in it, auto feather the left engine, it rolls into the engine, it rolls away from the engine about the same way. So it's very responsive, very maneuverable, and it's a tough, rugged airplane. Grumman builds good airplanes.
It's interesting that you'd bring up Widowmaker. In World War II, the Martin B-26 was called the Widowmaker. The first version of it had short wings, and they were operating out of MacDill in Florida, and they said one a day in Tampa Bay, and that was about true. They did improve the airplane, but historically, the B-26 had the best combat record of survivability of any combat aircraft in World War II. So rumors are not always true. More questions? Yes.
In which aircraft?
We've only got one person.
Well, in the Mohawk, it started out about 2 hours before takeoff for an infrared mission. We may have as many as 16 targets to look at in one night. Some were strips, some were points. We had an occasional area we wanted covered, maybe a kilometer, 2 kilometers square. You'd start planning that, plotting all these maps out, and then the TO would take those maps and set out to the airplane. You'd go out, do the pre-flight, get it ready to go. And as you were en route to the first target, he was loading coordinates into the Doppler navigation system and would hand you the map to try and run it visually if you could. You would run, as I say, anywhere from 6 or 8 to maybe 16, I think I flew at one time, targets, and then return back to the base. Most of the flying was done at about 1,500 feet above the ground, maybe 1,000 in some cases. 2,000 and others in the mountains in the dark. That was the only scary part about it. But
that's where you got into the controlled flight into terrain.
Yeah, you didn't want to scud run too much out in northern two corps, southern I corps.
About other questions? Yes.
Where were we based at?
Yeah.
Initially, Phu Hep, and then we moved north a few miles to Tuiwa when the Air Force moved out of Tuiwa. I'm sorry? Before I was there, there were several other companies floating around Vietnam, from Vung Tau up to Phu Bai. I forget where all they were. By the time I was there, there were 3 units left, one down by Saigon, the 73rd, the 225th at Phu Hep and Tuiwa, and the 131st at Phu Bai.
I have a question for O2s. When were the O2s withdrawn from Vietnam?
In 1972.
So they stayed pretty much till we decided we were leaving.
Yeah, they were there, and then they shipped them back. The first unit was in Battle Creek, Michigan, for the Michigan Air Guard was the first unit, then Chino, California, then New York, and then the rest around the country.
Other questions? We were unable to get the Huey, which was scheduled for today. We're sorry about that. The airplanes are strange things. They're like women. Sometimes they'll be there, and sometimes they won't. But okay, one more thing.
For all of you people who are actually interested in the forward air controllers and the liaisons and the infrared aircraft, there is a video on the forward air controllers, it covers all of them, that the military channel has, and they play it every once in a while, and it's very interesting. It describes each aircraft and their missions, and it's very interesting.
Other questions? Yes. How good was the Mohawk at taking fire, and what evasive actions were used?
It took damage fairly well. Flying over Laos, I can probably count, though, in maybe one hand, the number of times that I was certain that I was being shot at. They didn't light us up with radar. They tended to shoot at sound. and the Mohawk is quiet enough. You hear it out here during an air show. The airplane goes by, and then you hear this little kind of whispering rumble. And they tended to shoot at that rumble, and they shot behind you most of the time. The infrared airplanes down at lower altitudes were in small arms fire range. They did take small arms fire. Occasionally, they didn't even know they'd been hit. And other times, in one instance, it came through the canopy of the side of the hatch, hit the pilot in the neck, cut his mic cord, and exited somewhere up in the circuit breaker panel overhead there somewhere. As I mentioned earlier, I saw one come by with both speed boards blown out. Another one, they had a work stand under the wing, kind of clowning around in a homemade movie, and the guy starts walking up the work stand and came out between the engine and the fuselage, and they brought that airplane home. It was very, as I said, it was a very tough airplane.
Ed, did you have?
I flew the aircraft along the North-South Korean border, and technically the Korean War has never ended, so they're shooting at one another all the time, and they would shoot at us all the time as well. In fact, one night I got shot at by both sides.
Serves you right. It's a living.
Our policy was no reaction at all. If the North Koreans would fire a missile at us, we had to wait until we actually saw the missile coming before we could evade it. And it basically, surface-to-air missiles look like a huge, regardless of the size of the missile, it looks like a huge telephone pole with a huge flame coming out the back. But we were not, we were instructed not to react until they actually fired the missile at us, and then we would perform evasive maneuvers. But generally, it was small arms fire that was usually behind
us. Just following the rules of engagement, right?
Yes.
ROEs.
Can I speak to that, too? On SLAR missions, because of the altitude, very seldom when you get shot at by small arms. I don't recall being shot at very much. But when we went into Cambodia, when you were doing low-level visual reconnaissance and photo missions, I want to say it was unusual to come back without having a couple of holes somewhere in the aircraft. And like John said, usually they didn't lead you far enough, and the tail of the aircraft took most of the hits.
John, do you want to add anything?
Well, only that basically in Laos, what we got shot at with, we were running about 6,000 or 7,000 feet above the terrain, trying to average that, and then the imagery that came off the SLAR would line up with the imagery on the map. You could put them on a light table, and they would overlap, and you could plot targets right directly to the map. So we were getting mostly 23 millimeter, 37 millimeter fire. But as I said, you'd see flak off to the side where there was nobody else but you. There's no one in the area but you, and they're shooting over here half a mile or more away. So you have to assume they're shooting at you. And I think as far as evasive maneuvers, only one night did I see tracers come up close enough that I rolled the airplane and dove away from it, and then climbed back up and got back on course and went. We did discover they had a 100 millimeter radar controlled gun over there. We had no indication they were tracking us with it until we developed the imagery off the SLAR and found interference that consisted of a straight line across the film, like you'd taken a ruler and a pencil and drawn a line across it, except these lines all tended to converge at some point off the SLAR imagery. And when we passed that on to the Air Force and asked them what they were doing over there, they said, oh, we think that's a 100 millimeter gun radar sight. And would you go out and fly boxes around it and see if they'll do that again so we can pinpoint it? And they never did light us up again after that. So I don't know, maybe it worked.
Maybe you weren't as good a fisherman as you thought you were. need to learn how to catch those fish. The role of trying to attract ordnance was quite an interesting role for many people. Any other questions? Yes. I have no idea. Does anybody know? So the question was, how many forward air controllers failed to return from Vietnam? Anyway, I want to thank you all for coming to Warbirds in Review. remind you, at 2 o'clock, we have the dedication here of the Scott's Warbird Alley. This is brand new. A lot of time and effort has been put in it to try to provide you a better experience at EAA and the Warbird area. One more time, I would like all the Vietnam vets to stand up, please. Well, in answer to your question, at least all these people came home. Yes. Everybody get that presentation tomorrow afternoon about O1s in these, what? No, but what pavilion? Where is it?
Polyfiber.
Yeah. Does that answer your question? Any other questions? Anything we've left out? Okay. Thank you very much. Don't forget, veterans, sign up over there, and thank you for coming to Warbirds in Review.